You're listening to Around Comics, episode 224, brought to you by InStockTrades.com, Afro Samurai, and Netflix.
Woohoo!
Oh, okay.
Your RZA, your razor, hit me with the major, the damage, my clan understand it, be flavor, gunning, coming at ya, first I'm gonna get ya, once I got ya, I got ya, you could never capture the Method Man stature, for rhyming, for rapture, got niggas resigning, now master, my staff, never, I put the fucking walk in the wildcat of terror, razor sharp, I sever, the head.
From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week a revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture.
Culture?
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 I got a little got caught up there.
Caught up with the culture.
And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you are in the area, please drop by.
The newly designed.
Isn't it looking nice?
Yeah,
he's looking working nice. Hard.
Spread things out, put some more bookshelves up.
Mm-hmm.
Put all the trades in there.
I know, he's deciding that trades are the way to go.
Trades.
Here.
Now he needs some more hardcover.
I know. I'm working on him. So, yeah, come on into Dark Tower. Tell him that. Tell Mr. Beatty that the folks from Around Comics tell you to drop by. Hey there, folks. I'm Christopher Neesman. Let me introduce you to this week's panel. It's we're just rocking it old school. It's the three of us. Haven't done this in a while.
Yeah.
Tom. Old school. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Sal.
Hey.
How's it going?
All right.
It's weird.
It's weird not having another person?
Fourth person.
Oh, it's good.
Right. Three of us.
It's the tricycle of Around Comics love.
Have you ever tried to knock a tricycle over?
Only with a kid on it.
Virtually impossible.
Only, but it's really trying to just knock the kid over.
Yeah, that tricycle, though, keeps rolling.
Yeah, the tricycle
kid falls off, but that tricycle...
No, it keeps going.
Goes on forever.
Yeah.
All right, I want to remind everyone that this episode...
Can't stop it, no matter how shitty the tricycle is. Just keeps rolling.
This episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do, in fact, ship for free. All right.
Omnibus.
So
get your giant hard to read. I've been reading the new X-Men Omnibus and
it's a tome.
It's fucking those things are hard to read.
The big
like
yeah,
I can't
are,
sit in bed and read it.
I actually have like a it was
a
actually like
cart.
A wizard stand.
Yeah, it's a wizard. No. It was a laptop stand.
Yeah.
That I had, and it actually works really well for that because I can roll it in front of the couch or something. And
I was trying to lie in bed and read it, and I was like, this is a failure. And then I just picked up the Fred Hembeck book because it's lighter. Like, I'm not getting crushed by this.
Your chest isn't caving
in.
Yeah,
I'm like, I don't know the proper way to read this.
I'm gonna find dead Tom
great book.
Trapped under a trapped
was,
trapped
great
under
book.
An
I can, I really, like, I post on the forum, I really forgot how much I really liked Grant Morrison's new X-Men. And
I thought you were talking about Fred Hembeck for a minute.
Oh, and I love the Fred Hembeck books. It's amazing.
That's one absolute that I didn't pick up, and I really wish I would have.
The Omnibus?
Omnibus is the new X-Men.
For about $200, that can be yours now.
Yeah, I know. That's why I don't have it. But,
I am kind of excited, though. I got awarded from Amazon that my Ultimates Volume 1 hardcover, that they have found some more in stock, and I'm going to be able to complete my Ultimates hardcover collection because I have Volume 2, so now I'll have Volume 1, hopefully.
I would have sold you my Volume 1 for $50.
I know, you and a lot of other people.
Now they're coming out with
the Omnibus.
Omnibus.
So, which I didn't want to get. I didn't want to get the Omnibus because I had Volume 2 in the hardcover.
Right.
So, man.
Hey, I don't think the Omnibus is the best
format for books.
For recent.
They're beautiful looking, and I love them, but
they're hard to read.
They are hard to read.
And I can see the value in the older stuff, maybe, because it's a but really, like, I'd prefer to have the oversized hardcovers of Ultimates rather than the Omnibus.
Yeah.
You know, like, it would be easier to read. It's not like a difference.
Well, I agree.
Yeah, size wise, it just seems a little odd to me.
I was talking with Scotty today. We were talking about Wizard of Oz, and I said when he finishes Wizard of Oz, they should come out with an Osnibus.
Nice.
He laughed at that too. I thought it was kind of clever.
Always thinking. Nice.
200 pages of notes and.
Well, he's gonna do more, I think. So.
Yeah, there's gonna be more Wizard of Oz.
More Wizard of Oz goodness.
There you go.
Well, guys,
stop with the omnibuses.
So, I guess. I still like the format. It's.
I just think now we're on this. Does the Brubaker Captain America really need to be in an omnibus when you can get?
Well, it is kind of nice though, because I mean you have the sort of the whole complete run of his in one volume, or not complete run at this point, but it's complete up to the death of Cap. But
I just
the thing that kind of drives me nuts with the newer stuff is that you're not gonna like with that. It's like they're not gonna do another Brubaker omnibus probably. You know, so it's like, okay, well, what do you get then? The hardcovers to go for everything else?
You realize that is almost what he's on 47? I mean, they're getting close to the 50th issue. It seems like he just started that, and they're getting close to 50 issues on that book now.
Yeah.
That's just crazy.
Did you like that issue that came out this week?
I really liked it.
I liked it. The only thing I didn't like, and this is really nitpicky, because I loved it, 95% of it, I didn't like... Now that I'm about to say it out loud, it sounds even worse. I didn't like how the fire looked. Like, it's that weird, fakey, like, when they take a lightning bolt and they just, like, Photoshop it into something. Like, the fire looked really weird in one
page.
See, I
thought it looked okay because it seemed like, because it wasn't, like, just fire. I mean, it was, you know, this constructed virus thing. It almost, like, to me, it looked like napalm. As opposed to like fire, it almost looked like lava.
There was just one scene where I looked at and I was like, because it was the one scene where it was just that framed by other things, and I was just kind of like, oh, that looks
weird.
That looks kind of weird. But I mean, it's
that's
a huge
nitpick. That's pretty nitpicky.
It's not, like I said, it's nitpicky.
The one frame of fire.
The one thing, one frame of fire. Yeah, the other 99% I loved. Yeah, I mean, I'm
the art in it I thought was really good, and the story I thought was fantastic.
Oh, the story. This I love it because it. I like the fact that it's starting to pick up pace story-wise a little bit, and it's not so... Brubaker stuff sometimes I feel has a tendency to get into these really long lulls of like where you're just kind of waiting for something.
Daredevil goes to Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the Daredevil in Europe.
Well,
With this, it's been the characterization of Bucky because he's been dealing with, okay, am I going to be Cap? The Winter Soldier and all that stuff, and it's like it has hit this valley of like self, you know, mutilation or not, but
it's almost
sort of
not
this depressing, this depressing sort of thing, nobody else
in the Marvel Universe feels the weight of Steve Rogers' absence more than Bucky.
No, absolutely, and I think it's necessary. But now we've gotten past that, and it's just he's sort of.
It's the difference between. Talking about it all the time and then having the character do stuff that relates to it.
Right.
I mean,
right.
And that's the simple, sort of the simple thing about comic books is sometimes the best. While Bucky's thinking about how hard it is to be Captain America, have him jumping around kicking guys.
Somebody.
It seems stupid to say that, but why not? You know, why not have that action?
But
element?
There was too much. Yeah, there was too much of him thinking about
too
it
much
and just sitting
out.
Around.
It
really
the last issue, the Bucky Namor team up was awesome.
Oh, yeah,
oh
fantastic.
Anything. I love that. I love that whole thing with Namor and Bucky. I love how he wrote Namor. In the last issue, how you talked about old friends are the only type of friends someone like Namor has, And I thought that was the perfect characterization of Namor, as apart from how Namor has been depicted in a lot of other comics. Of like
he's such a character that people just don't seem to have a grasp of, but Brubaker nails that. And there is that kind of asshole-ish but respectful relationship. That Bucky
Bucky asked him to do something and he did it.
He bitches about it, he's an asshole about it. The king, you know, the prince of the seas, you know, breaking in like a common thief,
but he still does it because Bucky asked him to do it.
I just love the fact that Brubaker is sort of slyly bringing the invaders back together. Yeah. Not slyly, but you know, he's doing it in a way that's not just like they're back together, you know? It's like he's building this thing up.
It reminds me of some of my favorite stories with The Flash when Wade was writing it about Wally having to deal with being Barry's replacement.
Right.
And, like, the mechanics of, like, figuring out, like, can I be my own Captain America? You know, can I be my own Flash? Do I always have to be
in
the shadow of somebody else? And when you can write that really well, it's really interesting because it appeals to most people feel that at some point in their lives, especially you know, comic book fans. Sure. You know, we're normal people. You feel like, you know, you feel displaced at times.
As guys, I think we all sort of at some point have felt that with our own fathers. I mean, I know I have, you know, sort of the in the shadow of my father and that kind of thing. So it's a very easy thing to sort of
identify with.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm in no rush to see Steve Rogers come back.
No, you know, I'm fine. I'm fine with it.
I have to.
He will eventually.
Because I, you know, I when this all happened in the beginning, I was like, oh, this isn't gonna last.
Oh, six issues.
Yeah, six issues. You know, six months maybe. And yeah, at this point, it's like I'm not in any hurry for him to come back at all. I think Bucky's a great character as Cap, and
it's made it fun again.
It's great to read the Fred Hembeck book because there's a couple jokes about Bucky being dead from like the early 80s where he's like, well, you know, they never found the body. They can always bring him back, you know? And like, yeah, and I laughed at it because I was like, yes, they did, you know, and now, a couple decades later.
Speaking of Cap and Bucky and the Invaders, see my Somni commission?
Nice. Yes, very nice.
Didn't he just do an awesome job of that? I was telling Sal, it's a real temptation to like once a year get Chris to do a commission and just have a wall of Somni commissions, and I can't do that. But so I'm sorry, Chris, I can't have you do any more commissions. Otherwise, it will never ever end.
You should draw an Invaders book.
Ugh.
Well, you know, like I said, I'm hoping to see the Return of the Human Torch. Something that
Brubaker's doing that Marvel's. What is that book that weird flashback book that he's doing? They announced it in New York. Like, I forget what it is, but
the 70th anniversary.
Yeah, it ties back to like old stuff where he's going back and writing stories about like the original Human Torch. So maybe you'll get a little bit of that.
Like they're building this all up to bring back the Human Torch, and which was interesting because that was something like first, that we talked with James Robinson about. You know, he's like, it's a shame that that character
isn't around.
It's the first Marvel character,
and that he's bringing him back. And I mean, I can only assume that's what's
they're building
happen,
up. Yeah,
they're building up to that. But to have him and Bucky and Namor in a book, you know, today in a well done book is going to be a pretty
it's cool,
cool thing.
Because I think it's one of those things where. Publishers steal ideas from each other constantly. Mm-hmm. You know, DC and Marvel have stolen ideas from each other
since the beginning
of when they started. And I love that. I love
Fantastic Four was an answer to the JLA.
Yeah, I mean, they've always gone back and forth. I like that Marvel for a long time seemed scared of introducing legacy or like history to a lot of characters. And I like in the last couple years that they've been willing to. Like Iron Fist and Captain America.
Iron Fist is, if any character in the Marvel Universe has become a more interesting character, it's Iron Fist with Brubaker and Fraction.
And Swarzynski's
been great.
Kicking ass on that book.
But just them bringing that whole idea of the legacy of the Iron Fist, I mean, he's become such a more interesting character than he ever was. I mean, he was always just that guy in a yellow and
he's like a rich dude who did kung fu.
Yeah.
Once they took the booties away, he became a much more interesting character. No, but you're right, because tying it into the... I think comic fans love the idea of legacy and how comics have tied that in, the history of characters and having
people that
have carried the mantle before them and how that becomes important
to
them.
I think people who like good stories react to that sort of stuff. People like the... people, especially mature readers, adults, like to read stories where there's the illusion of it's a piece of something bigger.
Right.
I mean, you look at all the sort of classic pieces of adult, you know, science fiction or, you know, of any type of fiction, fantasy fiction. Mm-hmm. People like adults like to read stuff that is, you know, a bigger epic and bigger.
That's why Star Wars and Star Trek and the larger universe.
Yeah. Whether or not they actually ever flesh all of it out is, you know.
No, but hinting to the idea.
Yeah,
that
but it's like
there's
it's
something
bigger.
Before this story that you're reading. I mean, it also just goes into good storytelling of, you know, I think it was, I believe it was Hemingway who said something about, he referenced the tip of the iceberg. And it's like his theory on writing was always, you're only showing the tip of the iceberg. You create all that other stuff, the histories of characters and you know their legacies and everything else, and you only show the very tip of that, but you always write with that in mind so that you can, you know, you can create a real fleshed out story, a real character. A character in a book, you see it, that story, you know, sometimes when they're flat, it's like that nothing has ever happened before or after, or
in Star Wars. I mean, they mentioned the Clone Wars in Episode 4, the very first Star Wars movie, and it was the idea of the Clone Wars and what that could possibly be, which was, I think,
you've said before, it's like sometimes
when you need to stop explaining stuff.
And that's where I'm going. My imagination,
filling in the holes.
Yeah, of what could possibly have been the Clone War was much more entertaining than what the product
eventually showed.
That came out.
Yeah. Well, that brings me to one of the books I actually specifically want to talk about, which is Battlefield's Dear Billy, number 2 of 3, written by Garth Ennis. And,
the man you want to
kidnap. Who we have decided must only from now on write World War II stories.
Illustrated by Peter Snersberg.
Is
that the correct pronunciation?
Peter S.
And I love his World War II stories because they include so much of that. But he includes a lot of it within the story of just like these people have had so many things happen to them. They're just 3-issue stories, but he gives you enough to figure out there's so much depth to them.
Right.
And if you haven't read the Battlefields, yeah, the first 3 issues was a
The Night Witches.
Yeah, it was a Night Witches, which I think is coming out in trade soon. It's about Russia was so depleted of soldiers and pilots that they enlisted women to fight in these horribly antiquated planes against the Germans. And the story about
just
how these women sort of innovated a new way. They would turn off their engines and they would glide in, and the Germans called them Night Witches, and about sort of the reality of what, you know, they had to kill themselves if they were shot down.
Yeah.
And it was this horrible sort of story that also had the counterpoint of the German, like a German with a conscience point of view. That character was also involved in it, sort of a all's quiet on the Western Front type angle to it. And this story is about a nurse who was raped on an island in the Pacific during World War II.
Left for dead.
And she becomes a nurse in a hospital, and she meets a pilot, and she's confronted with the choice of killing a Japanese soldier or not. I'm not going to spoil it because you guys haven't.
I haven't read the second
one. The second one, but it's all told through letters that she's writing to the guy that she meets. And you get so much depth about what her character is going through.
Who I'm already afraid is dead, and she's writing letters to a dead man.
Yeah, one of them is probably dead.
Damn it.
One of them is probably dead.
Knowing Garth Ennis, they're probably both dead.
But it's
you're
going to
break my heart,
it's
Ennis.
Absolutely amazing what a great writer and a great artist can do in 3 issues to flesh out those characters. Like the end of the first 3 issues, it was like, that is the most amazing, that's like the perfect end to that story.
Sure.
It wasn't sentimental, and it wasn't like, oh, like, what
top,
a nice ending to this. It was like, this is what
sort
war...
cold reality of
yeah,
war.
This is, you know, it's unforgiving.
I mean, going back to what we were talking about a little earlier about that epic sort of setting, I think that's one of the reasons why World War II has been such a rich thing for writers to write about forever, you know, since World War II. It's like...
It's a great thing. It's a wonderful...
It's so epic, and you know...
It's more black and white.
Yeah.
So it's easier to, but it's easier to pit heroes versus villains, and it's also easier to have space to put
the
gray areas in, as opposed to where there's already gray areas. It's hard to like get grayer than, you know, Vietnam. You know, not to say that there weren't interesting books and stuff about Vietnam,
but because you have the open space between between there, because
you can confront people's ideas about what they think of right and wrong. Like one of my favorite showcases is the Unknown Soldier book, because it just becomes a showcase of all these weird like gray area situations, and even Sergeant Rock sort of gets into that a little bit. That's a little bit more gung-ho, but it's still at times
It touches on it as much as maybe it could at the time.
Yeah,
you know, I
mean, and you know, also at the same time, I think that modern Western stories are the same way. That Westerns were always, you know, good and bad, black hat, white hat, and now you can do that with Westerns as well. But the same thing with a World War II story is that we look at that with, you know, a very nostalgic spyglass, and to be able to explore stories in that can hit chords that you don't get in, like, Vietnam stories, because it wasn't as innocent.
And in Dear Billy, I'm impressed by Ennis's ability to write a woman. And I'm not a woman, but Ennis, who has written some of the crassest things possible, like sexually, but it's like, I would, as I said to you earlier, I would kidnap Ennis and I would keep him in a room and force him to write war stories. And then I would also have someone drawing them for me. Maybe I'd kidnap Norton and have them sit in a room and write and draw war stories for me. Because I could read Garth Ennis war stories forever. Like, I hope that this book goes forever.
And something I noticed, when the first trade for Battlefield's The Night Witch's storyline came out. And buy this series in single issues, I would suggest, because they're $3.50 a single issue, and the first trade for the first three issues came out, it's $12.99. So you're actually saving money by buying this in single issues.
And I love the fact that they've totally just, like, every time a new story starts, it's a new number one.
For each. That, you know, that's weird. It's like the
I don't blame them. Listen, whatever they have
whatever
to do,
you have to do to sell it, yeah.
Bye, Josh.
And Josh Elder, who's leaving, Josh from last week. Don't ever start writing kick-ass World War II stories, because Tom will kidnap you.
I'll kidnap you, and I'll keep you in my house. But
all right.
I whatever they have to do, every issue could be a number one. As long, like, I don't give a shit about that numbering, as long as it just keeps going.
1.2, little small.
Whatever they have to, put out 20 variant covers done by everyone. Just keep going
keep
doing whatever you have to do keep telling those stories.
It's a very, very strong book on the shelves right now.
And so I have to give credit. I did not even realize it existed until iFanboy picked the first Night Witches as their, and that was what I bought the first one because of that.
And, you know, I totally forgot this last week. So Josh Flanagan, this is the same night that we're recording last week's episode, which was Friday the 27th. Happy birthday.
Oh.
It's Josh's birthday. So
this is like 52.
So this is coming out like a week and a half after his birthday.
Like 11.
Yes. But we are wishing you happy birthday on your birthday. So happy birthday, Josh.
So tonight is his birthday?
Yes, the 27th is his birthday.
Oh, well, happy birthday to Josh.
So, yep. Yeah. They were twittering about it today.
Fantastic.
The Twitter.
Although they didn't say anything to me about my birthday, so
Kiss
my ass, Josh.
So fuck them.
No one said shit about my birthday.
They're all at WonderCon right now, by the way.
Body fucking die.
And then speaking of World War II, I have Batman and the Outsiders special number one.
What?
I'm joking.
To talk about a book.
Yeah, go ahead.
This came out a couple weeks ago.
We're here for.
And I talked about it on the forum, but Thor 600 was a book that just sort of blew me away. It was an oversized issue, and it doesn't really follow. Why it's 600, I don't know, because it's the series is on
because they did a restart, and so
at 600,
no, they did a restart of Thor, but if you had continued the numbering, it would be at 600. They did that with Fantastic Four, I think. Or
so, are they going to keep going at 601?
Nah,
they'll
probably pick
back
up
at
like
58
or whatever,
16
or
number one.
Number one. Well,
baby.
Anyway, I've been enjoying the Straczynski.
It was technically the 600th issue of Thor.
Yeah. Does that include like the
Weird Tales of Suspense?
I don't know. It's 70 years. And
whatever, close enough for them to do 600. There's some reasoning by which 600 was legitimate. Yeah.
And they sold a lot of copies.
But regardless, it was a really, really fantastic Thor story. It was for the first time in a long time, probably since the Simonson years, that I felt like I was reading a battle where Thor...
Where the ground shook.
Yeah, where like a god was fighting, or gods were fighting, where these incredibly powerful.
This is no battle for men.
Yeah, it was just a very visceral sort of battle scene throughout the book, and maybe it was because of the lead up to it and the sort of the meaning behind it and the fact that I don't want to really spoil it, but Thor was fighting someone that he didn't know who the character was, but it was someone that was related to him, but he didn't know it while he was fighting this character, and it was all sort of set up by Loki. And
well, that's the cool thing about this series, and I've almost caught up to it with how JMS has modernized it, yet it's very old style tragedy type story.
Absolutely,
to it. Yeah,
absolutely,
but modernized so that you don't
feel like it's old stories.
But it's
like
structurally, it's an old tragedy
story.
Yeah,
absolutely, it is. And what he's done with the Loki character, I think, has been fantastic in that regards of really bringing Loki back to sort of the roots of the character of you know, a sort of Weasley, you know, underhanded Machiavellian type of character, and not, you know, at some point Loki got to be more of like just your traditional bad guy, and lost sort of that the idea that he was the weaker character, and that he had to use his brain.
He's the god of mischief.
Yeah, absolutely. And this character, this Loki, is very much that, and has been planning this since the very beginning of the series, which is, I don't know how many issues it is now, 27 or something.
I'll go
like that.
24.
I don't,
no, I don't.
No, it's
is
not
it more than
that.
It's not even up to that.
Less than, it's like 13.
Is it really only like 13?
Yeah, it's
only
been
crap. Yeah. Okay, well, but this issue in particular, I really enjoyed the beginning of the series. In the last couple of months, it seems like it sort of hit a bit of a lull.
I think literally that it just hasn't been coming out.
It hasn't
out.
Been coming out. But even the story, I felt like it seemed like it was kind of slowing down a little bit the last few issues. This one was just fantastic, though. It just was a kick-ass scene or battle scene with Thor, and the results of it, the sort of what happens afterwards and how that's going to affect the book. And I mean, it just had a lot of weight to it to me, and it's been a really long time. I mean, Thor's always been this character that's been flying around and with the Avengers and in a lot of different books, in his own book, and it never, like, the only time they ever were able to make him matter was when he was in Asgard, and there was like this big epic, you know, Asgardian threat kind of thing, and that went back for eons, and Straczynski's been able to take all of that, the good parts of that, and bring it to the modern world and here with the rest of heroes. And
well,
yet,
I've
yet
loved the
it,
stuff.
Yeah.
I read the first trade of it, and I was absolutely.
They are on issue 12. So this would have been
okay.
Issue 13,
okay.
And they'll probably
well, they,
after
they had
this,
the Matt Fraction written one shots.
Yeah,
that have been
yeah,
coming out
yeah. There was like three or four of those.
So I think the next issue will probably be like 14 if they continue if they count this as issue.
It is
13.
It's like a $4.99 book. Yep. It's real thick. There's a bunch of backup stories, or not backups, but reprints. Old Thor and.
Nice.
Mighty Thor stuff that is sort of timely. I mean, it makes it's a lot of stories about Baldur, who this story is really kind of based on, because he's now ruling Asgard, and Thor's being sort of banished from Asgard in a sense. But overall, I mean, I just thought, yeah, they printed all the covers,
wow.
All six,
and it
covers
yeah, it's they actually the numbering does start with Journey into Mystery.
Journey
into
okay. Yeah. But overall, I just thought it was an absolutely fantastic book, and made Thor just the kick-ass god that he should be, you know, in a fight against another god. It's just and honestly, it was like there was, because of this whole restart of the series and the way that Straczynski has done it from the beginning, there was actually a moment in this book where I thought Thor was going to lose and die. You know, because like Straczynski's been able to do that, like he's given it the tone of like anything could really happen. It's not like it's not unthinkable to imagine Thor dying, and that's kind of a rare thing in superhero comics for me to get that feeling. You know, in a battle.
Well, he died not too long ago.
Well, yeah, I mean maybe that's part of it too, but I just absolutely loved the issue. I thought it was the best of the relaunch, and I've liked all of the relaunch.
Now, is it? I don't know the pronunciation. Is it? Coipel or Copiel? Or
I always said Copiel, so I don't know if that's the correct.
I would think it would be Copiel.
Yeah,
Copiel.
I think it's Copiel.
Love his very, entire very, vision for
oh,
for the looks of this. I mean, right now I'm thinking there are three people that have drawn Thor for me. It's Kirby, Simonson, and Copiel. I mean,
no
there.
Question.
How do you like the redesign of the
costume?
Of yeah,
I Thor. Love it. I,
isn't
I,
it great?
It makes so much more sense. I mean, it's not goofy looking.
It's war armor.
Yeah, it's armor, but it's not like the over the top. Even Simonson's designs were too old looking to some degree. You know what I mean? They I don't want to see Thor as like a misplaced Asgardian god in the Marvel universe. You know what I mean? I want it to be more than that. I want it to be a better connection to the our world. And I love the fact that Donald Blake is back. That Donald Blake is Thor, and you know, seeing him with this walking stick and slamming it on the ground and turning into Thor is what I grew up loving about that character.
I tell you what, that is not an easy outfit to draw.
No, with all the scale mail. Yeah.
Actually, you know, we were talking about Somni a little while ago. He had done a Thor sketch, and his sketches are mini commissions, and it was in the new chainmail, and he's like, not going to do that again. it is
going to draw that chainmail.
But I love the redesign. I mean, he looks godlike. He looks like a god of war.
It's just awesome. For once, it seems like Thor's more than just like the, you know, kind of Superman ripoff or. I don't, you know.
Well,
he doesn't seem like a strange character in the Marvel universe.
What I love about it is that he is in the Marvel universe, but he is definitely set off to the side. They are doing their own
thing. He's doing his own thing.
You can still.
It's not a Dark Reign title.
No, I don't believe there's a Dark Reign tie-in.
But the Thunderbolts can show up. Iron Man can show
up. Yeah, I mean, he's had interaction with he's in Kansas or whatever.
Nebraska.
Yeah.
I loved them putting him in Nebraska, and I love to see how Asgard,
he's not in New York.
How Asgard fits into, you know, Middle America.
That's been interesting, the interaction between the natives and Asgardians.
Yeah, I actually decided tonight that I can't wait for the next hardcover, so I'm just
buying all the single issues.
I'm gonna get the single issues.
You are so easily swayed.
I am such an impulse buyer. I'll be tossing and forcing, my style is awesome. I'm causing more family food than Richard Dawson.
Samuel L. Jackson returns in the sequel to the best-selling anime of 2007, Afro Samurai Resurrection. Afro Samurai avenged his father and found a life of peace, but a beautiful and deadly woman is forcing him back into the game. Starring Samuel L. Jackson and Lucy Liu, with new beats from the RZA featuring 2 hours of extras. Get the Blu-ray and DVD on February 3rd. Afro Samurai Resurrection. One brother, one path, 1,000 deaths.
Visit AfroSamurai.com for more details.
Chris, do you have a book to speak of?
I have. Give me just you lead off.
I want to talk about something that came out a couple weeks ago, actually, which is Batman and the Outsiders Special Number 1, written by Peter Tomasi, with art by Adam Kubert.
Oh, hey! Before I keep forgetting to
son of a.
Music, Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh, Wu-Tang Clan,
yeah. It was going to be the end of the episode before I got it.
Cash rules everything around me. Cream, get the money.
So there you go, Wu-Tang Clan this week.
Batman and the Outsiders Special, number one. I have always kind of liked the idea of the Outsiders. I have the Outsiders Showcase, which is weird. It doesn't quite fit. Like, I've always thought the Outsiders was a cool idea, that Batman would organize some group, but I don't think a lot of writers have ever figured out something
really good
to do with them, actually. And interestingly, with Batman dying or disappearing, Tomasi has figured out a way to actually make the Outsiders interesting.
By who leads them?
And you get in this story. Yeah, the fact is that Batman leaves a message for Alfred saying, like, if you're getting this message, it means I didn't hit a certain button by a certain time, it means I'm probably dead.
And that's totally something Batman would do.
Yeah, and he says, you know, and it's got a real emotional beginning.
Have you ever thought that it may have just slipped his mind to
hit the button? Oh, shit, Alfred thinks I'm dead.
Damn it.
No, of course not. It's Batman. He never forgets to
get
hit that button.
Get me a pigeon. I need to send him.
Well, you know, it's got a real emotional beginning because Batman says, you know, I've been lucky enough to have two fathers. I had my father Thomas, and I had
did
you.
Did you cheer up?
Yeah, that's a little sad.
Those Toms tearing
but he
up
says,
on the
you
train.
Have to. The reason I started the Outsiders wasn't just to fight these people. There's something else that's been going on that I've been using the Outsiders to work
plan.
Against, and no
has.
One knew about
of
it.
He has.
I haven't told anyone. I need you to get them together. So Alfred has gathered the Outsiders.
Alfred and the Outsiders.
Alfred,
now.
Yeah, and Alfred's the leader of the Outsiders. So this whole issue is him
going
to all the Outsiders and like convincing
getting
them
the band together.
But it's really great because Tomasi finds a way to make all of them interesting. He makes Geo-Force.
Impossible.
Interesting. No, it's great.
It's
the scene where he goes. Geo-Force is in this castle by himself. He has no family. He has no friends. And now he's got these Earth powers. He buries himself and just sits in it for days, like, because it's where he feels most calm, and like he doesn't have anyone else in his life. He lost everyone at this point. So when Alfred asks him to join, they all gather together, and he's like, well, you have 24 hours. When you come back, you've joined the Outsiders, and you kind of have to cut yourself off from your life for a little while. And Geoforce
my
is
life
like,
is
I've
sitting
got nothing.
In dirt.
And Katana, who lost her family, is also like, I don't have anyone. And Geoforce brings her to the place where he fought Deathstroke in that weird Brad Meltzer issue. And he was like, this is all I have. You know, it's like a weird scene because instead everyone else, like Black Lightning's like thinking about his family and everyone else is thinking about his family. And all Geoforce has is like this one fight against the guy who killed his sister and how sad his life is. He doesn't have anyone. This is the closest thing he has to a family is the Outsiders. And I was like, oh, Tomasi finally did something that was, you know, like made Geoforce interesting. You see Metamorpho, you get an Owlman, a new, I don't know if this guy's ever been introduced before, but he's Ray Raymond or Roy Raymond. I shouldn't really look at it. It's one of those two. He's an investigative reporter who's like one of these guys who like goes after like kidnapped kids, but he gets in fights. Because he cares so much about like doing things.
He's like Geraldo.
He's like Geraldo, but if Geraldo wasn't
turn into
a pussy,
a douchebag.
Wasn't a douchebag. If he actually was like, I'll fight this guy to stop this from happening, and Alfred brings him in. He's like this weird, and no one quite knows what to think of him because he hasn't been an outsider before.
Right.
But Batman had wanted him to be involved in whatever he's doing.
So Batman has left explicit instructions for Alfred.
And Alfred's got to go around, but it's awesome. And the Creeper is involved.
Oh,
in it.
Nice.
Like,
wow.
So it's this really interesting group of characters gathered together. The art is awesome. It's laid out in an unconventional style where it's going across the entire page, top to, like from side to side in like three lines. And there's bats always flying around and all of in all of the scenes, you know, and it's really well done and really well written. And I'm like, I want to see more of, and I bought the next issue of The Outsiders and I enjoyed it. And I was like, I like seeing Alfred having to be in charge because Batman says, listen, you know, Tim and Dick are going to have their own stuff to deal with.
Be busy.
I'm asking you to do this. If you don't want to, I understand you've given more than anyone could possibly have given to help me, you know, you have 1 minute to like put your hand up to the thing, and Alfred puts it up immediately because Alfred immediately decides he wants to carry on whatever Batman wants to do. And it's just cool to see Alfred put in that
situation.
Team leader.
Well, like you, I've always liked the idea of the Outsiders, but I've always been disappointed.
They've always
in
fought
it.
The lamest.
Yeah. It's just
Baron Bedlam and like Fourth of July.
I don't know how many times I've picked it up, like three or four issues worth, and just gone, you know, it doesn't
be
get any
better.
It doesn't get any. So I'm excited to hear that because I haven't read that and now
that the Creeper is involved in the Outsiders.
And
Tomasi's
awesome. Got a really cool version of the Creeper where he really points out the fact that it's a curse to Jack Ryder that the Creeper exists. And like it's not something that he's happy about, and it's a constant conflict between him and the Creeper, knowing that he needs to use the Creeper to get things done.
Do you guys ever think Alfred just gets tired of Bruce Wayne's bullshit? You know,
maybe
Batman's bullshit. Just sort
he must
of like
get paid a lot.
Yeah, he must. I mean, he goes through a lot of shit. It's just I imagine if there's ever.
But I love Alfred, and that's kind of why I love this. Because I'm like, oh yeah, Alfred. Alfred's kind of in charge. He's like the Batman. It's Alfred. It is Alfred in the Outsiders. Pretty much is what the
Alfred
story.
Alfred in the Outsiders. That's pretty cool, actually.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice, awesome.
And the Kubert art's amazing. It's the best.
Andy
of the best
or
stuff.
Adam?
It is the Adam.
The Adam Kubert. Okay.
Is he the better one?
I don't know.
I think so.
I don't know.
This issue is awesome.
Can I see it?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. I want to see it.
One I really enjoyed that came out a couple weeks ago, G.I. Joe number 2, as Joe is back at IDW, and the relaunch has been a lot of fun. Anybody else here reading
I have not been reading the G.I. Joe.
It's very much a nostalgia read for me from reading the G.I. Joe, the old Marvel G.I. Joe back in the 80s and being a fan of the animated show. And
obviously a Roadblock fan.
No, of course I was a Snake Eyes fan. Everybody was a Snake Eyes fan.
Everybody loves Snake Eyes.
Yeah, you know, he's a ninja. But Chuck Dixon is a special ops ninja, which is
even better.
Doing a really nice relaunch of Joe. And the way that Dixon writes, G.I. Joe is kind of a natural book for him to do.
Sure.
He does great, I don't want to call them formulaic military stories, but it's G.I. Joe. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's an elite military force that nobody knows about, and you know they have to throw away their identities, and they're technically, you know, dead. They've all died in the field, and then they take on the code names, and that's Joe. And we're starting to see the early reveal of Cobra. As Joe has never actually officially fought Cobra.
And yeah, because so this is like a whole relaunch. I mean, this is an absolute complete relaunch.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Cobra at this point is just sort of like an unnamed terrorist organization, right?
They're starting to hear the name,
right,
and they don't know
who it is.
Yeah, so we get our first glimpse of the Baroness. In this one, and a reveal on the last page, which I won't give away, of a pretty famous Cobra character who you would
I can't remember him anymore. Yeah. I mean, I loved G.I. Joe when I was a kid.
It all comes right back to you whenever you jump into this. But it definitely has a modern spin, modern technology, modern military concepts in it.
Right.
The art is very good, and like I said, Chuck Dixon writes a really good military tale.
I read the Zero issue and the first issue of it. I haven't read the second one yet, and I kind of got the feeling of it a little bit was Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, a little bit of that.
Like the feeling of that, of like, you know, dealing with each individual character more so. Uh-huh. And sort of their own personalities.
Duke is not the leader of Joe.
It's Scarlet.
Scarlet outranks him. Yeah. We don't know if Scarlet's, you know, technically the leader of G.I. Joe, but she outranks Duke.
She's still a woman, right?
And she is.
Yes, she is a woman.
Starbuck is a woman now. Which, you know, off the comic subject just for a second, but you're getting caught up in BSG.
I am.
I'm wanting you to get like,
I've been
caught up.
I just finished the first season.
Really? I have to give you credit, Chris, because you talked about this show for 2 years while it was on, and I didn't watch it at all. I was like, I don't give a fuck about Battlestar Galactica.
A lot of my friends have gotten into it lately, too.
I didn't like the original fucking show. I don't want to see that bullshit. I don't want sci-fi. And you kept fucking pounding away at me how good it was, and then you finally gave me the first season, and I watched it, and I was hooked. And then I watched the first season and then the first, like, half of the second season, and then for some reason I just stopped watching.
Just kind of took a break.
Not because I didn't want to. It's just whatever reason, I just didn't. And then recently I was sick like 2 weeks ago, and I was home from work, and I couldn't really do much of anything, so I just laid on the couch and watched, like, the rest of the second season that whole day.
I got this cryptic text message at 11.
And now I'm like,
do you have season 3 on DVD?
Yeah, and then I went out and bought season 3 and 4, and I've been, I'm getting through season 3 right now, and it's a really, really good show. It really is. I'm absolutely hooked. It's funny because I can't really pick out a character in that show that I completely like. Like, there isn't one character that I don't at times go, oh,
even Adama, you want to.
Yeah, there's.
You know,
I mean, there's even parts of Adama. It's just like, don't be such a dick.
They're all flawed.
And Starbuck drives me nuts as much as I like her. You know, and like Lee Adama is. Sometimes he's very noble,
my
but he's such a pussy.
My favorite character is Baltar.
He's fantastic.
As I read on the internet, someone described him as a Muppet in a Shakespearean, like, watching him just, like,
fumble around. Oh, wait till you get into season 2, dude. Yeah. Oh, my God. It
keeps getting better and better.
Gaius Baltar is probably my favorite character on that show, but although of late, I think I've gotten a character I hated in the beginning, which is Saul.
Saul Tai.
Yeah, I did not like him at all, and now I absolutely love that character. Yeah. And yeah, it's just
the old man's gonna hear about this.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I would say that
was really good. That's
very good. Bye, Jose.
I absolutely love that show now, and I'm probably more hooked into that show and those characters than anything else I'm watching right now. Even as much as I like Lost, like, I'm not as connected with those characters as I am with the Battlestar Galactica characters.
I like how they did the special effects. Like,
yeah.
The shaky.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, the camera shaky.
It obviously hid the shortcuts that they would do, but it made it.
It worked.
Well, that's actually kind of a funny story. You know how all of the paper in the series, they cut corners. That was kind of an inside joke, is that the entire, like, production qualities
is cutting corners.
And they just wring every cent that they have out of it to make it the quality that it is, but it's all by cutting corners on things that they can, and so that became a running joke.
We'll use phones.
And so, yeah, yeah. And so all of the paper has cut corners.
I absolutely love that show, and like I said, I'm probably more connected to those characters than anything on TV.
It's one of those things that it's the only bummer about recording on Friday nights here is that
it's on. You missed the live.
It's the new episode. I'll go home and watch it.
I remember watching the miniseries when it came up as I was home from.
And it was okay.
I definitely had graduated from college already, and I think I was not doing anything with my life at the time. And I watched it, I just happened to be watching the Sci-Fi Channel. I was like, wow, that was actually pretty good. And then by the time it started showing, I had moved and I had no money and didn't have cable, and I just
lost track of it
for like a couple years. And then I kept hearing things. I'm like, one of these days, I'm going to watch it. And then I finally was like, my fiance is, of course, in Pittsburgh, so I have a lot of free time in the evenings. I was like, you know, I'm going to watch Battlestar Galactica now. I'm going to finally start up. And I was like, yeah, it was good. This is really good. It's very smart.
It's very smart.
Yeah.
Four episodes left, or actually three. Actually, by the time this comes out, two episodes left.
Well, so. I'm only in season three, so I got more to enjoy.
Speaking of smart.
Oh, I was going to say, real quick on G.I. Joe, they just started the Origins miniseries, which is written by Larry Hama. If you're an old school Joe fan, Larry is writing.
Old school Larry writing Old School Joe.
Nobody does it like Larry Hama.
I wanted to mention, as far as smart goes, Umbrella Academy #4. Is it wrong of me to wish that Gerard Way would give up this foolish music
and write more comics?
Simply just write comics all the time, because it was one of the funniest and most interesting comics I had read in a long time. Not to mention the fact that the art by Gabriel Ba is, of course,
gorgeous.
Beautiful.
Awesome.
But this book is so good that it completely shocks me at times when I read it. I'm like, oh my God. It's got all the smarts that
it's a big idea, but it has the subtle.
It's got all the smarts. It's got all the smarts that Morrison fans think that Morrison books have all the time.
I ain't saying shit on that.
It's also funny. Not to say that Morrison doesn't do that, but like when people build up Morrison stuff to a certain level, this has all of that.
Plus, it
makes sense and it's funny.
Yeah,
and it's
a fantastic. It's one of the few books that have come out in I don't know how long that to me feels, you know, new.
Yeah,
like a new idea.
Like some, it's like something's happening.
This is a new idea. This is a new. You know what I mean? It's been a long time since, you know, because we see so much stuff that's just sort of rehashed. You know, and just sort of a variation on a movie or a variation on some other comic or whatever. And this just seems like completely out of left field.
Whenever I consider Hellboy as a new concept in comics, and then I realize that it's 20 years old, you know,
Getting shot in the head, not a big deal. It's like, and he doesn't bother to explain it, not in this family.
That's the other thing I love about that book is that he drops you into the middle of it. He doesn't explain anything. It just, this is the world.
Yep.
This is the world that these characters exist in, so accept it.
It's got fucking time travel.
Yeah, well, time travel and all sorts of crazy shit.
The last time I felt that way was on a Gabriel Ba drawn comic, and that was Casanova.
It didn't live up to it though, unfortunately. Casanova sort of fell short.
Well, it kind of had a meteoric rise for that six issues, and then
nothing's happened.
Casanova was good.
I really liked Casanova, but it was too like too clever. I think it was like trying to be too clever to some degree. As much as I liked it, and it looked beautiful, I think it got to the point where it was just like, I don't know. There weren't enough notes to play out.
Yeah.
Well, the story just sort of suffered because of, like, you know, Fraction seeming to want to put so much into it, you know, like so many little things, as opposed to keeping the story maybe a little more linear and just
a little bit less of a fever dream.
Well, yeah. I mean, to illustrate how awesome this is, the scene where they're in the boardroom and one of the guys is like, why are you draining? You care to explain to board why you're draining this corporation into oblivion, John Boy? The guy's got the corporate chair turned so the back is to them, and you just see him say quietly, rocket sandals. Yeah. And he's like, what was that? And he just throws down like his own drawings of like a guy with super
like
rockets.
Like a Roman centurion.
A super Roman soldier.
With rocket sandals.
Nice.
What does that even mean? I have no idea. I'm sure we'll find out. But I, you know, it's like, what?
Rocket sandals. Why? Yeah. And then the best part of it is the letters at the end, where all the letters are from people who never read a comic before.
Oh, yeah, they're all like,
I liked Gerard Way's stuff, and
I bought it at Hot Topic, which is one of the people on this issue. Like,
the dude, I mean, yeah, he absolutely has a fresh voice in comics, and you know, I continually amazed by that book because it is not
a vanity project.
No, not at all. Not at all.
It is not My Chemical Romance comes to comics.
No, it's a fantastic comic book, and I will buy it as long as it is made.
Yes.
Yeah,
so everyone out there, stop buying My Chemical Romance CDs.
And just buy the comics.
Just buy the comics.
He should write more comics.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, he like I said, I think he's one of the more creative voices in comics.
And didn't My Chemical Romance do something for the Watchmen soundtrack?
Yes.
Yeah, I think they did the title song or something.
Them and Billy Corgan.
Yeah.
Oh God.
I like My Chemical. I actually like their music, but I'm that like 15-year-old emo guy. So
yeah, you
that's
are.
Why
yeah.
I like
yeah.
that stuff.
So you enjoy that.
None of that My Chemical Romance. So it's all Wu-Tang Clan this week.
Yeah.
And then next week it'll be
Oak Ridge Boys.
Oak Ridge Boys.
No. I think next.
What was Chris listening? Want to know what Chris was listening to today at work?
Oh,
what he's rocking out to? What is the whitest rock band you could imagine? Like the most homogenous sort of whitest rock and roll band.
Yeah, beer drinking, head banging.
Molly Hatchet?
No, not that bad. AC/DC. He was rocking out to
close
the AC/DC.
This close to having an AC/DC.
I'm like, oh my God. You
love AC/DC. You guys get to pick the next two music spotlights.
Right. So, no, it's way more fun for me to make fun of you.
Oh, I know. Actually, the new Nico Case album came out this week. So
I don't even know who that is.
Exactly. The New Thunderbolts by Andy Diggle.
Good.
Continues to be really good.
Yeah,
and
it was good.
Warren Ellis, suck it, because this is better.
Yeah.
Oh.
I can't disagree with that.
Andy Diggle is writing. Who's drawing that?
Yeah, who's drawing that?
Yeah, you were going to ask me that, weren't you? Roberto Della Torre, I believe.
Who the hell that is, but
another
it was
one
good.
Of them, another one of them European guys.
It was really good.
Another one of those damn Europeans.
Actually,
it made me want to see a Doc Samson miniseries by this guy.
It does a great Doc Samson. And Sal actually pointed out he's drawing Norman Osborn as one of the only artists at Marvel that doesn't draw him looking like Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh, thank God.
I know.
Diggle has such a great grasp on Osborn as a character, as being it's kind of like almost what we were talking about with Loki, of being this really manipulative Machiavellian. I mean, he is a criminal mastermind. And he's insane. Write him like that. And Andy Diggle writes him as an insane yet brilliant Machiavellian villain. I mean, he's trying to take over the world, and Diggle is writing him like that. He's almost convinced Barack Obama that he's...
They don't name him as Barack.
Well, they don't name him as Barack Obama. But it was kind of funny because, you know, you could tell in the issue that that Diggle's version of Obama is, you know, still, you know, kind of, you know, smells trouble like a farting in the car with him. It's like there's something not right with you, no matter how all of this shook out.
He'll be punching him out at some point.
Yeah, there'll be a cover of Obama punching.
Yeah, with Savage Dragon in the background.
We joke, good this week. But you know that's going to happen at some point.
And if you are an old-time Thunderbolts fan, this definitely has some nice payoff. It has a few of the older Thunderbolt characters that are kind of sitting back, laying low, and they're starting to develop plans to get control of things again. But Norman Osborn in some of the titles that I've read in the Dark Reign stuff is actually becoming a fairly interesting villain in the overall Marvel Universe, as opposed to just Spider-Man, which he was relegated to for so long. But Thunderbolts is great.
It's from the benefit of fact of a tremendous amount of very creative people have been able to get their hands on the character, like Remender and Punisher, like Diggle in Thunderbolts. A lot of guys who are great writers have been able to, because of the looseness of the idea, you know, they've been told, they've just been told that he's in charge. You can do what you kind of want to do with that, which, to their credit, is worked out, I think, creatively well for a lot of the titles, as far as I've read.
I think
Fraction has done it really well, too.
Osborn's probably the most interesting character in the Marvel Universe right now. I mean, at least one of the most interesting characters going on in the Marvel Universe. And he's been pretty consistent in all the books. I mean... I haven't really read a bad variation of Osborn in the recent few months.
Now, art wise, I would say that some guys need to loosen up from the Tommy Lee Jones.
Are they trying? Sal was asking me this: are they trying to
cast him for the Avengers movie? I don't know. I don't understand.
Loosen up a little bit artistically from that, but writing wise. Fraction, Remender, all those guys, I think, have done a really good job.
I think Bendis has done a really good job with Osborn. Yeah.
He's in the penalty box for me for the rest of the year.
Personally? He's in your personal
penalty. He's in my personal
penalty box.
Yeah, 2010 Bendis.
Going back to Andy Diggle, the other thing I think he does, and he really exemplifies it in this issue, is his pacing of action.
Yeah.
Is fantastic. I mean, it's as good as like some of the best action movies.
He gives you just enough space to catch your breath, and then something else happens, and so you're never lulled to sleep. But it's not just one action scene after another.
And it's never like even like the complicated scenario in this, where it's like you're on a plane. The airlock is busted, the door's busted open, guys are getting thrown off, and then the plane... It was a very complex sort of action sequence, and I never felt like I didn't understand exactly what was going on, where everyone... I mean, because so many times I find that in comic books where it's like an artist just doesn't know how to illustrate, or maybe the writer doesn't know
how
to... That
same exact thing happened in New Avengers at one point.
Yeah, it made no sense whatsoever what was going on. I mean, you see the difference in... And I'm sure it's the combination of the artist, but I think Diggle's shown it in other stuff that he's done too. He just seems to have a grasp of how to illustrate action in a way that is exciting, entertaining, and makes sense to you.
What's funny about that is that he had actually, I think, tweeted about this. And Andy Diggle, you can follow him on Twitter, and he has some very, very funny but also insightful tweets. And he had posted through Twitter some thumbnails, stick figure thumbnails that he had done of a scene in the last issue of Thunderbolts of Black Widow basically taking out two guards and then like doing a backflip kicking the guns out of the hands of the guards and then doing a backflip along the way, and then she lands, grabs the guns out of the air, and takes them out. And what was really funny is that his stick figure drawing that he did as a thumbnail reference to the artist actually for me made more sense than what the artist actually ended up drawing.
Well, it's not surprising that he does that, because
he just
seems to understand action and how it
flows.
I don't know. Was he ever like a storyboard guy or something, or did he work in film? Because man, he seems to have a really good like cinematic grasp of action stuff. And
The Losers was like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's we just talked about Remender, and I think there are some Fear Agent scenes that he's worked on with Jerome Pena. That if you actually look at what's going on, it is an incredibly technical and complicated progression of events to jump out of a window, grab a branch, do a flip, catch something in mid air and then land.
It's very
true.
And their Punisher issues with the actions with him versus the Sentry.
It's hard to like script that out and then have an artist do that. So these are two guys that
I will say the last issue of Gigantic, there was some stuff in there that was a little more convoluted.
Yeah.
But art-wise, I think there were some perspective issues at times.
Yeah, I haven't read that yet. Some weird perspective. And it's really weird because the first two issues were fantastic.
Yeah, is it Dustin or Eric? Dustin.
I don't know.
There's a couple scenes.
Dustin is detective.
There's
like
a couple
the guy
scenes.
Sitting in the chair, and it's like the giant chair, and
it was hard to tell how big certain things were at times because
there were some odd.
He would be holding the brother, and the brother was a certain size in the foreground, but in the background, the character. But you couldn't tell
there was
the
a lot
distance.
Of weird,
yeah, there was some weird.
But I was
perspective
in the letters
issues.
Page, so.
So there you go. I did want to mention
it was really good anyway. Yeah. I mean, I love what Remender is doing.
It's a great idea
that.
For a story.
I love how he's executing it too. The story is
highbrow
like,
versus lowbrow in a weird way.
But he's
but
doing
also,
it in a way where it's not like preachy or seems like he's coming off as you know, like talking down to you because you know what I mean? Like he's doing it in such a smart way and funny too, and I love that book. I really do. I did want to mention one other thing when we were talking about the action scenes. I thought the last when we talked about this book already, so real quick, the Captain America 47. I felt the same way about that one. Like there was that whole scene of like Bucky getting captured and then Namor and Black Widow following them, and I thought it was just really illustrated well, and it made a lot of sense because it could have really easily not
fallen apart.
Yeah, it really could have. But I did have another book.
I have another one quick thing. Oh.
The Great Unknown, issue Rouleau. 1. Yeah, the new Duncan Rouleau series from Image. I was a little sort of worried about this book.
Apprehensive.
I love Duncan Rouleau's art. I think he's phenomenal. Uh-huh. But sometimes when, you know, in the Metal Men series he did, I couldn't understand what the fuck was going on in that book. because I had to drop it after a couple issues. His stuff gets so sort of complex and, you know, I don't know if his storytelling ability is necessarily up to par with his actual creative mind.
The
design sense that he has is fantastic, but I think sometimes he would benefit from backing off of that a little bit and making it a little easier to understand that story. In this, I thought he did that, actually. I think there was still great design sense to it, but at no point was I ever sort of felt like I didn't know
what just
happened. I never felt that like what just happened, and it was really an interesting kind of concept for a book about a kid who's sort of this brilliant ex-MIT graduate genius slacker who lives at home with his parents, and he not that he doesn't try, but every time he comes up with a brilliant idea, it's like right before he goes to patent it, somebody else patents the same thing. Or like he'll be on the way to the patent office and he'll see an ad for the exact same thing. And like crazy idea things of like, you know, contact lenses that you pour in your eyes like liquid and stuff like that. But it seems like every time he comes up with like this brilliant idea, the second before he, you know, he's going to be able to claim it, someone else takes it.
Dope.
And by the end of the issue, you realize there's something going on. Yeah. He's not, you know, this is happening for a reason.
Is he wearing a tinfoil hat at that point?
Yeah, kind of. But beautifully illustrated. Rouleau was phenomenal in it. And I just love his character designs and his sense of design for page layout. And I thought in this one, he really did a good job of illustrating the story first and serving the story first. And it was a really interesting concept. So I wanted to at least give credit for that.
Roll, I'ma give it to you with no trivia. Roll like cocaine straight from Bolivia. My hip hop will rock and shock the nation like the Emancipation Proclamation. Wig MCs approach with slang.
This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Netflix. Right now, you can start your free 2-week trial by going to www.netflix.com/Around Comics. At Netflix, you'll find over 100,000 titles to choose from, including classics and new releases, as well as TV series. Plans start from as low as $4.99 a month, and you can keep each movie as long as you want with no late fees, ever. Netflix has free shipping both ways, and you can expect your next selection to be delivered in about one business day. Now watch some movies and TV series over the internet for no extra charge. I use this service on my Xbox 360 and personal laptop and love it. So head over to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics and get started with your free trial today. Drug dealing styles and fat stacks. Only been a good nigga for a minute though, cause I got to get my props and win it. Yo, I got beef with commercial ass niggas with gold teeth, camping in a Lexus seat and beat straight up and down, don't even bother. I got 40 niggas up in here now who killed niggas. Bother. My people's all you with me. I'm done.
Let's do this. Let's do this book of the month.
Book of the Oh, I'm not involved in that. You guys
that came out last week, Tom.
Oh, oh shit.
I did have news we could talk about.
Savage Dragon 145 came out. Great jumping on point. Dragon is back in Chicago as part of the Chicago Police Department. So check that. And I'm almost just about finished up reading the Savage Dragon Archives Volume 1 from Image. And if you want to read just some comics of the era, early 90s, Eric Horson, Savage Dragon goodness, really, really having a fun time with that.
Awesome.
What did I tell you about talking about the same books that you talk about? You talk about shit on 11 o'clock comics, and then you fucking come on here, bring some new ideas to the show, Chris.
I talked about G.I. Joe. Let me know.
I did want to mention that our buddy Eric Houston,
yep,
the guy who wrote the comic book podcast companion, sent us an email saying that it's now available in previews. You can pre-order it. It's
not sick of us.
If you're not sick
format.
Of Well, you know, there might be some nuggets in there. I don't even remember what the hell we talked about, quite honestly.
Eric's going to be on next week.
Oh, yep. Well, then I guess I don't need to plug it
too
much.
Well, no, because it's available. It's in previews.
If you're not familiar with what it is, Eric interviewed a bunch of us podcasters in the comic book world, us and CGS and iFanboy and
Crankcast
and
Q-Paw.
Yeah, a bunch of
comic book queers.
And I would imagine that it's more than just interviews, too. I mean, we haven't seen it yet, so we don't know exactly what it is.
He interviewed Matt Fraction. And
yeah, so I think it's a book about sort of the culture of comic book podcasting, and if you're a listener, you may find it interesting. I'm sure interested to see what we said.
Yeah,
I don't really remember it, but
you know, I have that recorded.
I know we gotta put that out. We'll talk to him next week and see when we can put that.
Yeah, whenever it's. I think we had actually talked about when it's released. But what's so funny is that, you know, as fast as media changes, and it's going to be interesting to see what we said. You know, 8 months ago, and how things have changed now. It's
how full of shit we were.
We were talking.
I think we were either. We may have just been coming off a hiatus at that point.
Were we?
I think so.
I don't remember.
Yeah, then
I remember sitting down and talking to him, but I don't remember at all.
Sitting right here on.
I think I complained that some podcasts are too long.
I've got an email from Mike Boychuk. And he says, Dear Around Comics, I just realized that Nova's real name is Richard Ryder. And then a nickname for someone named Richard is Dick.
Dick Ryder.
Thus making his name, Is this why he has never taken the name Dick like Nightwing has? Or is he just more of a rich type guy?
Well, Dick.
Thanks. Mike from Ontario, Canada.
Dick, in the Batman world, was always Dick, wasn't he?
He was
never really Richard.
Richard Grayson.
Yeah.
Unless,
was he?
No,
ever?
It was
always Dick Grayson.
Yeah, he always called him Dick.
Yeah, I don't think it was ever really Richard. And so, Richard's always been Richard. I don't think he's ever been referred to as
Dick Ryder.
Dick Ryder.
It was probably a fucking joke. You know, whoever created Nova probably just thought it'd be funny. Dick Ryder.
Wasn't it Marv Wolfman?
He is a funny bastard. He probably did it on purpose. Yeah.
It's just Green Lantern.
He can hang out with Woods Kid, Holden Wood.
Dick Ryder, the Human Rocket.
Dick Ryder and Holden Wood.
The Human Rocket. Dick Ryder, the Human Rocket.
That's pretty. That's some innuendo right there. Yeah.
It's just Green Lantern.
Wears a helmet, doesn't he?
It's not just Green Lantern.
It is not Green Lantern.
Certainly not this series. It's not.
I'm reading
The original.
The original, the Nova Corps.
Let's not listen. Yes, I'm not putting anything against Nova, but the original. It's just Green Lantern.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm not saying. Yeah, the original idea was just a rip-off of Green Lantern.
So now he's the last
question.
One. So what? He's Kyle Rayner, Tom? Is that what you're saying?
No, he's better than Kyle Rayner.
Okay.
So at least acknowledge that outer space exists.
No, Nova.
God,
I'm just
Nova's really good. Have you
just
read,
about
have
done
you
with
read?
The hardcover? It's
No, I like,
and I love the fact that the, like, you know, they're building the Nova Corps.
Yeah,
but they're not. I mean, because you're like, oh Jesus, really? They are just doing Green Lantern at this point, but maybe not. Maybe not. Nah. I have I don't have any emails, but I have some.
We got a couple of voicemails. I forgot one of them. We talked about what to do with old comics and old books, and I forgot to
burn them.
But when you call whoever you are that called in, your cell phone was cutting out. Please call back in because the voice message was garbled. And then we got another voicemail, which was really frightening, and I don't want to play it because I was a little scared.
Offensive, frightening, and offensive.
It was something about Kirby Crackle going to the fourth world.
It was
funny.
At the end of it, he kind of just said, "Hey, I love your show."
There were some
play it.
Okay. Sound effects.
Here we go.
What's up, fellas? This is Fester from Lansing, Michigan, and I'll suck your dicks for some Kirby Crackle. Shit, take me to the fourth world. I'll take your penis to the fifth world. You guys rock. I love the Green Lanterns.
Let's come to the fourth world.
All right, so there you go. I'm a little frightened.
Tom, you started a whole... I would imagine within 6 months there's going to be crack cocaine named Kirby Crackle out
Kirby
there.
Kirby Crackle.
Somewhere.
The Wire was on for six seasons. Kirby Crackle.
What about Koblish doing like the entire show notes before we were actually able to post them on the forum?
Scott Koblish?
It was the inker.
Because he's up all night inking.
Inking Perez.
Inking Perez's shit.
So, great job on Legion of Three Worlds, by the way, Scott. Looking great.
What do you guys think about... I'm gonna be kind of a dick, but the Comic Foundry's end, the 6-issue magazine.
Didn't they announce that like 6 months ago?
I don't know. I just thought it was funny. They put out a press release about the end of that magazine after 6 issues, and it was because Tim Long is becoming the editor of Men's Fitness or something like that or something.
Oh, it's Men's Fitness?
It's not Men's Fitness. It's like, some fucking magazine, Men's something.
Yeah.
Men's Health.
Men's Health, Men's Fitness, one of those.
Men's
Lifestyle. Oh, Complex is the name of I never even heard
good,
of that.
Good for them for trying. That was, I think, unfortunately, a perfect example of have your shit together before you come out with your first issue.
Damn.
Wow.
Wow.
They did kind of have their shit together.
No, they came in. The first issue was black and white. Then they changed the color after that. I thought that it was.
It was sort of a weak. I don't know.
It was a weak launch. And in magazines, especially niche magazines, to a niche market like this, you can't do that. So I thought it was kind of doomed from the start. Good on them for trying. I think comics need more. More
published material.
Well, more to get away from the fanboy.
But it was just turning it into like another stereotype of like
it was more of the hipster comic
hipster
book
douchebag.
Yeah,
as we talked about earlier.
Yeah, yeah. It was. So, whatever. So now I've pissed off anyone that liked that magazine. But no,
all three of them. Come on.
Apparently. Apparently, it's not a whole lot.
I like that magazine. I like Scott Pilgrim.
You are a hipster douchebag, Tom. I think it's evident in your tastes.
My taste. go to hell, you old men.
Oh, yeah. You are a lot younger.
Hey, I'm playing Wu-Tang Clan this week.
I'm playing the Wu-Tang Clan.
10 years ago.
I'm running. Listen, I'm compromising with the youngsters.
I know who Old Dirty Bastard
is. I'm older
is.
Than him, and it's sad, isn't it? I don't know. There was some.
Do
interesting...
you know which one is Big Baby Jesus? This is one of his other names.
Method Man.
Old Dirty Bastard also went by
Big Baby Jesus.
He's
dead.
He's Osiris.
Dead. He's dead now.
Yeah, I know that.
I just found this.
Do you know when they when he was on the run and he would run on stage during shows?
Uh-huh.
And then they caught him in a parking lot at a McDonald's signing autographs in a Kevlar bodysuit.
Well, if you're
insane.
You're going to be out in public, man. You got to
Big Baby Jesus. You got to run for him.
Yeah. Going upstate's my destination. Handcuffed in back of a bus. 40 of us. Life as a shorty shouldn't be so rough. But as the world turned, I learned life was hell. Living in the world no different from a cell. Every day I skate from takes, giving takes. There was was some sort of interesting news. Marvel has suspended their open submission policy.
Yeah.
Sort of an end of an era.
You know, I don't know
how many people ever came from that anyway.
I think that CB has done such an awesome job of finding talent.
Those foreign European you know, guys that'll work for Nichols and
serious. I mean, there's new people on Marvel books, it seems like, every month, and they're talented artists. So I think CB is their submissions department. So
he definitely travels a lot.
Well, if you follow his Twitter, he's been giving a lot of hints on what to do and what not to do. And it just seems like if you want to get picked up or you want to get work, you guys just got to go to a con.
Go to cons and self-publish. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like they just aligned their policy to reality.
Yeah,
is what they did. You know, instead of saying
dropping something. I mean, they always just it was there because it was always part of Marvel's. It was just part of the history of it. Yeah, you know, you could submit
learn to draw the Marvel.
I don't know the last. I wonder who the last artist.
Bagley.
Is Bagley the last guy that's made it from an open submission?
Probably.
Yeah.
I think he won a contest or something with them. I forget what it was. But, yeah, it was through their some submission deal. Yeah. It's, but that's the last one I know of. So
It's kind of interesting. I mean, like you said, they're just basically aligning things with reality. But
just go to a con. Sort of you got to show him. As he said on his Twitter, you just go to a show, you talk to him, and you show him your stuff. That's how you actually get...
Throw CB a couple of bucks. He'll
buy him a drink.
Buy him a drink, and he'll put it on a good word. More guys get jobs from buying editors and guys like that drinks than they do from. Getting to know someone. I mean, getting to know, and because there's so many guys out there with their
portfolios.
A lot of talented people out there. So it's like there's only so much work.
Mm-hmm.
But
if you want tips and you're on Twitter, you should follow
CB.
CB Sabalski. Yeah. He's been
he's the guy who kind of brought Scotty into Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Was CB, and he's always on the lookout for talent.
CB's got a great nose for new comic talent.
Yeah.
He's actually
all these European guys that have come in.
CB's guys,
yes, he's been bringing all these guys in. He seems to spend more time flying around.
And he's an incredibly nice guy. CB's great.
Oh, CB's awesome.
He's a lot of fun. That all you got?
Suicide Squad
movie
announced.
Movie news, absolutely.
Possible Suicide Squad. They've announced
Count Vertigo in a movie.
The guy who
Deadshot. I wonder
if
he'll
Sherlock Holmes is, I guess, producing it.
Sherlock Holmes, what? Young Sherlock.
I don't
Holmes?
Even know. It doesn't. The new one with Robert Downey Jr. I bet.
Oh, is that what it is? Yeah. Okay, Lynn Pictures. Guy Justin Marks, he's writing 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, the Hack Slash movie, and Street Fighter is doing the screenplay. Yeah, that doesn't bode well.
Yeah, that doesn't bode well.
We'll see what gets made first, Suicide Squad or Hack Slash.
Suicide Squad will feature a mix of well-known and unknown villains recruited by the government to accomplish a task deemed too dangerous for superheroes. The historically independent operators must bury their own interpersonal conflicts and agendas to form a cohesive
unit. Will there be any Flash
test.
Rogues involved?
Oh, I hope so. That would be nice. Yeah,
like in the book, Captain Cole.
Captain Cole.
A lot of them made appearances in the Suicide Squad.
I was Suicide Squad.
I think there was one of my favorite Suicide Squad covers was Captain Cold. The hell was he doing on? I'm trying to remember.
Freezing somebody?
Yeah, maybe. It might have been. That'd probably be a good guess, I'd imagine.
Captain Cole, Mirror Master. It was Captain Boomerang posing as the Mirror Master
for a while.
Captain Boomerang was big in the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, maybe that's what
while.
It was. Captain Boomerang, I'm thinking of the blue and white.
I thought it was a great concept. It was, you know, even before Secret Six, there was the Suicide Squad.
That's why DC should have a page where they tell you what to buy if you like what you just read.
Along with the recap
pages.
If
you read Secret Six, then again, they would have to actually reprint Suicide Squad. They're going to have a showcase, but then that's been delayed. But
well, they've got the Ostrander, the last miniseries, which was okay.
It's okay, but really go back to the older stuff's better. Sorry, John Ostrander.
Well, didn't he write some of the older stuff?
He wrote, he was Suicide Squad.
Wizard cut off some more staffers this week. Seven more, including senior vice president of operations manager, art director, associate editor, and then a bunch of staff writers.
Yeah, so. from the press releases that people said that VP operations was really the guy that he was the glue that kept things together. So not good news for Wizard this week.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously in light of the C2E2 announcement, yeah, and more of this, it seems like Wizard is
whittling away.
Yeah. And then another thing announced this week was, or last week, I should say, but another new League of Extraordinary Gentlemen with Kevin O'Neill and Alan Moore, the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen Century 1910.
From Top Shelf?
From Top Shelf. Ooh. And Knockabout Comics.
Is that Alan Moore's?
I guess. Yeah, I've heard that name.
Is that kind of his
knocked
new,
about lately? New, I guess. New, I'm assuming it's his new ABC, kind of thing. It's going to be
Chris Staros will sell out to DC, and Alan Moore will just commit Harry Carey.
Fuck. God damn it! It's going to be three volumes, 80 pages each.
Nice.
Wow.
Nice.
And then I would imagine then later collected in a hardcover.
Did you see any of the preview pages?
I did, and they looked really...
Of course they look awesome.
Yeah, but even for Kevin O'Neill, they looked phenomenal. I mean, like...
When do they have really release pretty. Dates on those?
When is this? What did it say? April for the first one. Ooh. So...
It's going to be awesome.
Well, they'll definitely be available at the Windy City Comic Con.
Yes,
Top Shelf's going to be one of our exhibiting publishers.
There's a really nice interview with Kevin O'Neill about it on the Comic Book Resources page, so if you're interested. And some great, great looking preview.
And it will be awesome.
It will be awesome.
Yeah.
It will be.
If there's anything I would bet money on being awesome will be the new...
He had a book reprint come out from Avatar this week, and I'm trying to remember what the name of it was.
Anthony Johnson had done the actual scripting of it. Mm-hmm. I think it was based on a story written by Alan Moore.
Okay.
From Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
It begins with an A or a number because it's at the very far left of the story.
It's 4-2-1. I don't know.
Oh, speaking of Alan Moore, when this episode airs,
you're talking of me.
Watchmen has already
come out.
Oh, and we've seen.
And
it.
Alan Moore is already.
Are you going to that Thursday night showing?
No, I'm. I am going to. I'll be working on Thursday night, and then I'm flying to Detroit to meet the rabbi for the wedding on Friday. So
shalom.
Maybe on Saturday I'll squeeze in a showing of the movie in Detroit. No one goes to movies in Detroit because everyone is poor.
Oh well, true enough.
Detroit sucks.
Why are you getting married there again?
I'm not getting married in Detroit, but the rabbi's
from Detroit. You're importing a rabbi from Detroit. Is this a family rabbi?
Yeah, this is important.
So you're not Jewish, right?
No, I'm not Jewish. Yeah. Sam is Jewish.
Sam's Jewish.
Yeah.
And so you're importing.
She's one of the chosen people.
Is she from? She's from Detroit.
Yes.
Is this her family rabbi?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, then that makes sense. That makes complete sense. Yeah. I was just wondering. It just seemed a little odd. Mm-hmm. I didn't want people to think.
It's going
to
be a Jewish Catholic wedding.
Yeah.
Nice.
Jewish weddings are short. So
Catholic weddings
mostly,
are not.
So it will be mostly Jewish.
Nice.
Catholic weddings are.
If you haven't picked this up
brutal.
For me, I am not the most religious person in the world.
No.
So I am not old. I'm not holding on to the Catholic Mass. There's so much bullshit.
Are you gonna have to sing?
Am I gonna sing?
Yeah, that's what happens at a Jewish wedding, dude.
No, not
the bride and groom sing.
That's where the Catholic part comes in.
I have been to several Jewish weddings, and they have always avoided the groom singing. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You went to one, it must have been one where he wanted to sing.
I don't know. It was. I'll just say this. Never mind. I don't need to offend Jews now. I don't think that's a good idea.
Well, you offend David every week.
Well, yeah, but he's not.
Well, if you're on 11 o'clock comics, you just start some Holocaust talk.
Like that?
Yeah.
I was like, we need to step away from this.
I was like, oh my God.
We're from lockdown.
We're having like a Holocaust denier discussion now. I'm just like, No matter what comic book podcast you are,
is there anything that Vince won't defend? You know, that's the thing I want to. Is there anything that he
did? You notice the point where I saw the danger signs? It's like, okay, we need to stop. We're talking about emails. Had some emails. If you want to contact the show, you can do so at info@aroundcomics.com.
You can.
Please put listener feedback in the subject line. Helps me keep things organized because I get a little distracted.
I put them all in my Evernote
there
and tag them.
You're so dialed into all that stuff. I wing it, man. We are proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work.
And soup.
Financial soup. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, visit heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809. And like I said last week, details about a little hero event that we're going to be having here in Chicago in June. So stay tuned for that.
It'll be fat comic nerds sweating.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. We're going to have a good time. Thanks for the iTunes reviews. People have been leaving lots of reviews lately, and we've noticed a lot of new listeners out there.
Yes.
So if you are new to the show, thank you for giving us a listen.
Yeah.
And definitely drop by our forum. And if you haven't left an iTunes music review, please do so. Just like Shane Wood, Jurassic Alien, Cap Sue, and Chris CCL, which, damn it, Marshall, took you long enough.
Yeah. You sure there wasn't a redo? Like, you had never done one a long time ago, and maybe you did another one? Because somebody ask us that?
No, I think once you're there.
You can't do another one?
He could have taken his review down because we pissed him off and then done a new one. But
I don't know. Give us a voice. You can call us and leave us a voicemail, too.
Yep.
At 1-888. Look on the forum. Yeah, it's there. I don't know. I can't remember it.
Oh, and thanks to Chris Marshall from Collected Comics Library for leaving us a review. Check out Collected Comics Library if you are a wait for the trader. You can drop by our forum at aroundcomics.com and continue this conversation.
And argue with me.
Yeah, which
about
speaking
how
of,
wrong
it was,
I am.
It was kind of nice just to sit down with the two of you and chit chat about comics.
Yeah. We haven't done that in a long time. Just talk comics. Always some fucking guest plugging their bullshit, giving us their opinions like we want them.
I know Sal was like, so who do you have? Got a guest lined up? It's like, no guest lined up. He's like, you know, sometimes it can just be you, me, and Tom.
I did say that. It's like, we don't need anyone else.
So,
I mean, not that we don't like other people, but, well, I don't like other people.
Yeah. I don't either. But,
and that's why you do a single person podcast called
I Can Barely
Tom,
Tolerate
Tom,
Myself.
Tom versus the Fly.
Lucky it's not 15 minutes of silence. Deafening silence.
Check out Tom versus the Flash 2 to 3 times a week, even though you've been coming out pretty regularly three times a week.
Three. I always say I'm lazy, but man.
Pump it up.
Three times. Yeah, fuck that, man. And people pod fading left and right. I'm
pod fading,
rocking it hard constantly, three times a week.
Yes, as Tom runs you through the history of the DC universe, one comic at a time. And you can check out the aforementioned nuttiness at 11:00 comics. That's either every Thursday or Friday, whenever Mr. B gets that edited. And I have no idea what we're going to be talking about on there this week. It's, I'm sure, some
run fair, some sort of run fair. Yeah,
all
I know, exactly.
I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. That would be you and you. So thanks for being here, guys.
We're the small fish, that's why.
I want to thank Mark Beatty.
Small fish got to go after those big fish, man.
Oh, all right, I got you.
As always, yeah. Mr. Mark Beatty, thank you for hosting us here at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. Everyone have a fantastic rest of your week
like
and
big
weekend.
Fish. In the comic book podcast.
Big there fish, no very,
big,
very
small. Well,
kind
of big fish.
It's all relative, Tom.
I have the biggest Flash podcast.
Exactly.
There you go. It's all relative.
You're the number one Flash.
Number one.
Versus
number
the Flash.
Number one Barry Allen podcast on the internet.
We'll be back next week with another full-length episode. In the meantime.
You've really filled your niche.
Yeah, in between
in
time.
Between
thank
time,
you.
Between
we'll
time.
Be everywhere in...
And around
comics.
Kevin Smith believes in Loch Ness Monster.
smoke all the right like smoking Joe Frazier, the Hellraiser. Raise the hell with the flavor. Terrorize the jam like Tupac and Stan. Swing it through your town like your neighborhood Spider-Man. So
film a movie with an amateur dinosaur.
The Lone Ranger. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production. Copyright 2009. What? Take all your assets, cause I came to shake the frame in half with the thoughts that bomb shit like math. So if you wanna try to flip, yo, flip on the next man, cause I'll grab the clip and hit you with 16 shots and more. I got going to war with the melting pot. It's the method man for short, Mr. Map. Move it on your left, and set it off, get it off, let it off like a gat. I wanna break food, cop me back. Small change, they putting shame in the game. I take game and blow that nigga out the frame. And like fame, my style will live forever. Niggas crossing over like they don't know no better. But I do, true, can I get a sue? Not respect due to the 1-6, ooh, I mean, oh. Yo, check out the flow like the Hudson or PCP when I'm dusting. Niggas off because I'm hot like sauce. The smoke from the lyrical blood make me, ooh. One grab my nut, this cool. Here comes my Shaolin style. 2-B-A-B-B-Y-U. To my crew with the... Yeah, yeah.